listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back, 7:37 a.m. in the morning on this Friday. Yeah, it's a little, how would I say, kind of a little shady outside. We're going to have a little sun. We got a little bad weather coming our way, but that cold that I saw creeping down from the Canadas or the North Americas. Let's hope it doesn't make its way all the way here. Because, you know, early bird and I, we have these discussions about chilly versus cold. It was not chilly. It was cold. Dr. Dunham, back in the studio with OT and the early bird on the Lee Hardy show, along with Biff Hitchens. Biff, great job on the special.
Thank you.
The other night, it was heartfelt. A man I admire. And then, of course, I ought to be blushing. I'm always blushing when Dr. Dunham comes. But when the number one, when you talk about health and wellness in this community, there are very few people who've challenged us. Meg could probably tell us, I told y'all so. She's been telling us for years what we ought to do, how we ought to do it, and we don't really have to give up much to do it. And I think those things are finally sinking in. And I'm really serious about that.
Thank you.
Thank you what you've contributed to the health and wellness. A lot of us still wouldn't be here if you'd not been fighting and struggling with this.
Flattery will get you everywhere, and the check's in the mail. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm checking the mail today. We've dedicated so much. We know Dr. Dunham has done her segment, talking to people about mental health and addiction. We know the Mentally Speaking segment we do with Victor Sims every month. And educating our public about mental health. Meg, I've been telling people about how enlightening the DEA Citizens Academy was, mm-hmm. that every citizen, especially, first of all, every leader in this community ought to understand what we learned in that couple-month session. The information was from the people who do it every day, mm-hmm. the trend of what's happening with drugs and synthetics. Mm-hmm. Some of it was just, I don't want to say unbelievable, but some of it was what we see, how it plays out on the streets of this community.
I would, you know, you and I are two people who keep up with things. I would think we were formed. After that DEA Citizens Academy, where they showed us behind the scenes what goes on, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked at what the men and women in the DEA are doing. And basically, it's to save our lives. When you talk, with Dr. Dunham about mental illness, it's to fight for our brain. This isn't about being cool because you think drugs are bad. It will save the most important organ in your body. I know men don't think that, but it is the brain, okay?
And the link, and Dr. Dunham has been saying it for quite some time, The link of how they didn't just say it was a fight against drugs. It was a fight for our mental health. And then the segment, Meg, where when the doctor and the chemist from the DEA, when you were asking a lot of questions, and I said how he broke down how people without any medical licenses at all are prescribing dosages of stuff that'll kill you, and they don't even know what they're doing, and we see so many people overdosing and dying.
Absolutely, and we feel like it's, oh, feel good, you're a teen, you only live once. That's what's so troubling, is that when you're a teen, well, first of all, your brain isn't developed till you're mm-hmm. in your mid-20s.
Mm-hmm. And different brains and different DNA reacts different ways.
That is correct. And so anything you put in your body that affects your brain as a teen, it is more likely to do extra damage and get you addicted. And then your whole life is changed forever. Your marriage could be ruined. You won't have a job. I mean, a lot of homeless people right now, it's not because of poverty. It's because of untreated mental illness, mm-hmm. which led to poverty. And I'm including addiction is a mental illness. It is not a stigma.
Dr. Dunham, you got some help in this fight now. You got to make that. You have Miss Wellness to the 10th power.
Yes.
Right? Yes. First of all, wonderful special the other night, and we're going to get to one of our stars, the people who put their lives on the line, who fought this struggle, but who are also trying to help others. But talk about how this relationship came together and why it's so important. And you have continued to tell people, Dr. Dunham, don't separate drugs from mental health in this community.
Absolutely.
It's a mistake if we do that.
It is a mistake. We see it as one category of illness. Mm-hmm. And anything above the neck
is a mental illness if there are problems with the brain functioning. And so in many
not just if you're male.
Not just if you're male. That's right. Plus the men. So, you know, in truth, unless you approach it that way and think of it that way, you're going to be hard-pressed to get close at all to any good outcomes with any interventions. Right. So we have to think of drugs and mental illness at the same time because many times they coexist. In fact, many times people have mental disorders like they have mood disorders or anxiety disorders and all that may be fueling the substance use, or it may keep it going because people are what we call self-medicating those conditions because they're not getting professional treatment.
Well, Biff Hitchens, I'm saying around Mr. Hitchens, first of all, you're a hero. You really are. Yes. And, you know, I was talking to a good friend of mine who's an addiction. He's also a recovering heroin addict, William Slow Boogie, a pool. And he still fights with his addiction, but he was explaining to me with some work we were doing with AZAM and doing some outreach how it was the mental health side of it, you know, if we just look at the drugs. But he was talking about a moment of kindness that changed his life in terms of his recovery. It didn't happen at that particular time, but that moment, that encounter of kindness was something he thought about on his road to recovery in terms of his own mental state. Can it be that simple sometimes? Do we make it too complicated, Mr. Hitchens?
I mean, honestly, for me, mine was kind of one of the – since I suffer with bipolar and like the symptoms can be very just kind of like euphoric and fantastic, and not fantastic in a good way, but like just visions and things. And mine was kind of a spiritual experience, and mine's kind of been through a spiritual lens. I felt my higher power really just kind of come and touch me and say, you're better than this. You don't belong here. You know, you've done more. But I've had a lot of people throughout just in my first psych ward visit that were just really kind to me. And they're like, we understand. And just there's so many people along the way that have helped me. So,
yeah. Also in talking to Boogie, Boogie said that he thinks that finally mental health and substance abuse professionals, Meg, along with policymakers, He's encouraged. He thinks they're really starting to get it now.
Yeah.
That he doesn't feel like the people who suffer are the scourge of the earth. And he said, we have no idea at the mental stigma and social stigma that we attach on people who even in their quest and even when they want to do better. Do you agree?
I honestly, the stigma, I think, is the worst thing. Like, it is the biggest barrier to people getting help. I honestly fully believe that because, like, so many people hear bipolar, and I suffer with schizoaffective, which is schizophrenia and bipolar. Right. People think schizophrenics are going to shoot up schools, all those things. And I honestly hold a job. I have no symptoms. I'm normal. No one knows I have it till I tell them. I just want people to know that recovery is possible even for the worst of situations. So.
Absolutely. Y'all brought up so many things. First of all, it's called dual diagnosis. You have a mental, I don't even want to say mental illness. It's a brain disorder, a difference in your brain. So it doesn't feel good. You don't get diagnosed because, look, you want to try out for the football team in high school? Oh, you need a physical. They ignore the brain. And more males have bipolar. Mm. It's a gene. Think if we would have discovered it before you self-medicated to feel better with street drugs.
Great
and
point.
You got a prescription from a doctor, and then you never had to go that way. So then dual diagnosis because you had the bipolar, and then you had the addiction. So that is just so important. And about the stigma, think back just 2,000 years ago in biblical times. If you had epilepsy, they thought you were possessed by demons and devils. Now we know it's an electrical current problem in the brain, an organ. So I hope we're learning enough about the brain to realize you're right, that this isn't a stigma. It's just another organ.
Dr. Dunham, two agencies, what people thought was two different disorders, finally teaming up for one thing that's right?
Yes. And that's the hope. I think the more we educate, the more we put the message out there. It's been my goal to just get the word out, let people know that it is okay if you have these difficulties, just as it's okay if you have any other physical malady. But what is not okay is to ignore it and to act as if it's not there, because it will you will succumb to it eventually.
Yeah, but and I want you to talk about it, Meg. I want you to talk about this too. By not understanding this issue and the duality and how they work together,
yeah,
we have wasted billions of dollars.
Billions of dollars.
In
absolutely.
This community.
Billions of dollars.
In every social science, every clinician, every expert like yourself can tell people if we had just done it the right way, we would have saved billions of dollars. We would have less people in graves and less people in the prisons and less people in hospitals.
Yeah, and the fault is in many areas. Right? From the medical community, we've not educated well. It's not been a priority in our medical school education. If you did psychiatry, you were like one of those strange birds. Like
that's,
them.
That's a good point.
You know? And certainly if you did addiction psychiatry, what is that?
Wait, Dr. Donna. How my IT say for true, Chad? That's for true. There's a stigma, especially there's cultural differences too, Biff,
right?
So if somebody tell you go and see the psychiatrist got all kind of degrees, but you think the psychiatrist crazy.
That's right. That's what they think. Yeah, typically.
The stigmas are real.
It is.
Meg, I see you laughing.
It is. It's very true. I could tell you when I was in training.
I don't want to go see that crazy person.
That's right. I'm the last person. I am the last person, which is why we have to make sure that other people understand. Mm-hmm. 70% of the time, people who have mental illness or substance use problems are seen in the primary care office. Mm-hmm. And what do the primary care doctors know about this? They haven't really trained on it effectively.
Well, Meg, several weekends we've had with 15, 16, 18, 20 people in emergency room. We've had multiple weekends, 5, 6, 7, 8 people dying. If you would combine the region, those numbers would even go up. Mm-hmm. In the city of Philadelphia, now you've had more people die from overdoses than homicides.
Yes.
We see the numbers nationally. Mm-hmm. What is it like for someone like you who your humanity has always been in the front of what you do in trying people to get this? Do you think we get it now?
I'll tell you, first of all, it crosses every community in this city. And I may get a little lump in my throat. I just had a good friend who, great family, you know, everything, you know, in quotations, right, and they just lost a son. It is every walk of life, every age, every race, every income. It affects, because we all have brains that can become addicted, and we all have the inherent genetics right, where you can use. And you brought something up about the prisons. I have had doctors say it is the largest mental health hospital in the state, and it should not be. It just shouldn't be.
Our solution for mental health, and Dr. Dunham and many others, her peers, squawked a couple of years ago when they talked about spending millions for 500 more beds for the Paris prison. When that should be. Yeah. That should be a specialized clinic.
Yeah. And I wouldn't call it the largest mental hospital. It's the largest facility where the mentally ill are housed. Right. And because of that, it really should. They really should be providing intervention services for those individuals.
Biff, what you did in terms of giving your life to this and your special and doing outreach and educating people with your stuff, it was so powerful. It's affecting people from all communities, people who didn't grow up like you, didn't look like you. But when we see right now how people were treated in terms of race, in terms of where they come from, it has to make you feel good now that maybe we're breaking down some of these walls.
Yeah, that's really why I got into it. I mean, I was a musician by trade, and that life has a lot of, we know about the music industry with a lot of drugs and partying and stuff. And when I finally came through it and I finally, you know, just got over the hurdle of just started really maintaining my recovery, I was like, I got to give back. It was so terrible. And talking about the prison, I actually was that exact story. I had been up for a week, and I was just drinking a lot. And basically, we just got in this domestic argument. It was a very dysfunctional relationship. And I got put in prison I got put in prison instead of a psych ward. And I was bipolar in the tank. Whoa, and so I was
not
aggressive.
A good combination.
I was aggressive and over 300 pounds. So I was maced multiple times. I was maced upwards of 7 times, thrown in solitary, had feces thrown. So I totally can back up what they're saying because I was truly mentally ill. And even when I came out of it, I was in jail, not a psych ward, where I was horribly mistreated in jail. So yeah. Anyway,
that's a common occurrence.
Yeah. Wow.
Common occurrence.
Yeah, but Dr. Dunham, yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah, people are so intimidated by the mentally ill. And they consider them, as Biff have said, the threat. They consider if you have a mental health diagnosis that you are the ultimate threat. And in fact, people who have mental health conditions are usually more afraid of you than you are of them.
That's part of what why they react the way they do.
That's right. But if you push them up against the wall because judgment is already impaired, anything could happen.
Well, 504-260-9265. We're going to take a break in a minute, Ben, man. But what continuing our effort in partnering with WWL, I guess one of the great health resources and advocates of our time, Meg Ferris, Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham, and a young man like our friend William Poole, who has put his life on the line. Biff, you could have walked away. You could have kind of fixed yourself. You're a musician. You have opportunity. What made you, you know, because for some it's embarrassing, right? It's like being an ex-offender. You know, it's like second, third chances, even if you never got a first chance. What made you say, man, you know what? I'm going to put my face on national TV.
That was definitely a huge thought. I was like, all right, I'm about to announce to a lot of people my issues.
Because when Meg Ferris interviews you and talks to people, watch.
That's how.
All over.
But I thought about it. I was like, am I ready? But really, I mean, as far as my big thing is not only the dual diagnosis, but schizophrenia and mental health, because it's got such a stigma with the state of the climate, with the school shootings, all those things. And then, but the opioid crisis is just horrible. I mean, like just people that are, you know, trapped in addiction that they have to get a fix every day. It's not just to get high. And they're dying because people are giving them bad stuff.
Meg, you have a reputation for something's going when you, especially when you do your reports. And you'll see, I've paid attention to you over the years. You always go to the source. And there's so many who they go to the experts who are not the person with the addiction, or not the person with the affliction. Why have you, in dealing with the health, the wellness, even issues like this, you put front and center the people that many cases people consider the problem?
Absolutely, because that's what the story is about. It's about the person who we all can relate to. And I've always said in a story when I call, okay, I want the doctor who's the expert, but give me the patient. Because I can sit here and have the best doctor in the world give you the science, but how are you going to learn it when you feel when you have the empathy for the person who's going through it? And we can all relate in some ways to the person who's going through it. Addiction has so many forms. There's sex addiction. There's food addiction. You know, there's so many things, and everybody has a little bit of something.
504-260-9265. It's the top of the hour. We're going to take a break. We're going to have a little news and a little sports. And when we come back, guys, I want to talk about this partnership, where you want it to go, and some of the solutions. And you know, Dr. Dunham, I don't like to do any segment where you guys can't give people some recommendations on what they can do. And Biff, I want you to think about not only that spiritual moment, but for folk who are listening to our audience, some of the little things that they can do and how they can protect themselves on their way to recovery. Okay?
Okay.
We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back, 8:07 a.m. in the morning. And, man, what a powerful segment. We have a continuation of what we've done with Mentally Speaking with Victor Sims, what we do with Metropolitan and Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham. But right now, those two intersections have come together. They should never been separated, especially when you team up some of the great wellness reporters and wellness minds in our community, people like Meg Ferris, with Metropolitan, with young men and women who are giving their lives to educating the public. We finally, I think, as a community, understand that mental health and addiction, not only should not they be treated the same, but the people should be treated the same. We're going to go to the lines before we get back into the discussion. I know, Meg, you have a lot of data and information to share. And Dr. Dunham, I really want you to talk about why this effort is so important. How can people get involved? And how can families and communities begin to protect themselves? Line one, Al, you're on with Meg Ferris Dr. Dunham and Biff Hitchens.
Yes, recovering substance abuser. I just want to say that, you know, we need to know that it didn't become a real problem until the white community got involved, but it's been a problem in the black community. Could somebody explain to me what about that, please? Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. One of the things we learned during our Citizens Academy was it's been a problem everywhere
yes.
for a long back to the Chinese.
And yeah, and first of all, God bless you for your recovery.
Thank you,
and I wish you so much. Dr. Donald.
Yeah, in truth, it has been here since the beginning of time. You know, Mr. Sigmund Freud himself used cocaine. So it's gone back so far. Now the social climate is different, and so there are different things that prompt different interest or media awareness. But in truth, my feeling about this is finally, it's out there. And so whomever has or will have a problem, at least now it has the attention that it needs. I've been on this road of fighting this problem for many, many years, and never, ever has this subject matter been such the priority amongst the news media and so many different media. So I would suggest that those of us who have issues with the fact that people have been dying all along, and why now? Because it is now. And so we need to do what we need to do now and not hold on to any grudges about when it should have been. We have an addiction crisis. Opioids is the drug du jour today, but we have an addictions crisis, and the opioid problem will pass. It's going to be something else. So we need to use this time to address addiction wholehearted, which means addressing all the co-occurring conditions that are associated with it.
Meg, so many people, when they think addiction and mental health, they just think cocaine and heroin, right? Mm-hmm. But when we saw, a little town in West Virginia get chipped 10 million pills a year, two doctors in the town of Mobile distribute thousands of pills every day.
And he's talking about what the DEA taught us when they do their undercover investigations.
Heightened levels of THC in marijuana that is chemically altered right now. Talk about a little bit.
Right,
about
it's not
things.
Just somebody shooting up heroin in their veins. It is out there in, you know, MDs and pharmacists who have done wrong things, and you've seen that there's been some corruption. And that is really scary. And one of the women we had on our show, a mother, her son became addicted because he had a football injury or some type of PE injury.
Right.
And so he was given some opioids, some prescription painkillers, and boom, that 15-year-old brain just got addicted. And then he moved to the cheaper stuff, which was on the streets. And so I did a story on the fact that dentists now, think about who gets their wisdom teeth out. College-age kids, remember, the brain isn't fully developed till you're 26. You're more likely to become addicted. They're now saying, okay, we don't need to give you a prescription for 30 opioid pills, painkillers, because you had your wisdom teeth out. Take a Tylenol. Take an Advil. It's not that big of a deal, because there is the chance some people, first time, can become addicted. Other people, you don't have those genetics. Right. And so that's how a lot of people, you know, get started. My good friend Amir Baraka, a local actor who's done really big things, he said that he grew up in the housing project.
He started at 14 with his dad.
Exactly. He said that he felt, it gives me chills, that's the day he became a man, when his father, when he used heroin with his father. And so how can you blame this child who doesn't know any better? And so that's why we just have to change the culture. And on the marijuana, and I'm not going to get into discussion. I'm a reporter, and I remain neutral, and I cover all these things. But I can just give you the science from the National Institute of Addiction. It is addictive. It does lead the brain. It does lead the brain to use harder drugs. They're finding that if you use marijuana, because it's so high in the chemical, then, Alvin, when us baby boomers, when we were growing up, okay, that it actually changes the DNA in your sperm and egg cells. Not when you're using, that changes it so that when you have future generations, they're, and this is animal studies, they're more likely to want to use opioids. So you use and you don't know what you're doing to future generations. And it was really interesting is the studies that show it affects women's brains even more. It's scary to me.
That was one of the most fascinating things Dr. Dunham, is that each time, whether it was alcohol or drugs, It had a greater impact on the female body and the female DNA than it did male.
Yeah. In truth, the women's physiology is much more vulnerable, and female tolerance levels are lower. And so a woman with the same amount of exposure is likely to become full-blown addictive if they have genetic predisposition much sooner after their first use than a man would. And so it makes that, that compounds it even more. And certainly if she's pregnant while she's using, then you've got two lives that are impacted. That's why for at the federal level, pregnant women are the priority group when they come to treatment. And so we have to not hesitate at all when they walk into our doors.
Biff, you talked about your spiritual road to recovery. Misdiagnosis, being in prison and them not really understanding what was wrong with you. But, you know, we live in a state now where opportunities for mental health and recovery were cut. Facilities were eliminated. If you could talk to our policymakers, matter of fact, we did a show, one show where the governor asked for a copy of the tape, right? So they listen and they monitor the show. What would you say to the folk who are listening?
I would say that, I mean, really, I think the biggest thing is education. And I think education should come at the high school level, maybe in the health classes, because people are more, like we talked with, I work with young, like 15-year-old kids that are dealing with their first episode of schizophrenia, and they're very afraid to come out because their friends are going to shun them and all these things. So it doesn't have to be this huge class, but just a week or so saying, this is what bipolar looks like, this is what depression looks like, these are the things, and it's normal. And just the stigma, I think, stops people from getting treatment, which turns into addiction, like all the different costs that comes with treating.
And what about the governors, the mayors, the council members, the law enforcement people who want to make the prison the mental health facility?
I hope that people don't have the goal to make those the mental. I really just hope that's not the goal. But I really think I kind of feel like it's inhumane because how I was treated was extremely, I felt like an animal. I honestly did.
Meg, heads in beds.
Yeah. Well, we're getting away from that because remember on our show, we talked about drug court.
Yes.
And in our DEA Citizens Academy class, we had a judge come and talk about how now they're sending more people that
That's
way.
Right.
But I want you to think about this. Okay. In 2016 in America, 64,000 people died from overdoses. Okay. If 64,000 people died from, I don't know, Ebola, let's just pick something. Can you imagine the CDC? I mean, can you imagine what would happen? We would be up in arms. It's really no different. It's no different. And so we've got to do that. And one more quick thing is, my brother is a neurobiologist and teaches medical school at LSU Health Sciences Center. And finally, they are teaching future doctors the importance of this connection.
Yeah. I think to Meg's point, I do want to add, though, that in the Ebola scenario, you don't have, for physical illness, the contribution of moral judgment. When you talk about substance use in particular, that creeps into the conversation that somehow
it goes back
this
to
is
the
a
stigma.
Bad person, right? The parents are bad. And somebody, and if you bring some of the, and I don't mean to pick on our clergy or our faith-based community, but there are a lot of misconceptions there about where one begins, theology begins, and just human kindness ends, because people need to be treated like a human being with equal respect, regardless of whether or not you have this disease. And it is a disease. You got to call it what it is. It's a disease, and it's not a person's fault that they are born with a propensity. Many people, two-thirds of the population, have been exposed. Who hasn't had a drink?
I want you to stay there, Dr. Dunham, when you talk about how public opinion and people's minds are being exposed. I'll never forget the session I had at Harvard in the executive program when Dr. Ron David, one of the great leaders at Western General, talked about the crack epidemic and how political and fears shaped public policy that was didn't even match the science.
Yes, that's right.
And one of the examples he used was that we were all in fear of crack babies, so we started locking everybody up. When that, as long as a kid didn't have neurological or physiological damage because of that period, they were no different than a kid whose mother drank too many beers or smoked too many cigarettes. So talk about the fear that the public policy thing, as opposed to the actual science.
Yeah, and the fear is driving a lot of what we're doing right now, whether it is correct action or a problematic action. Mm-hmm. The whole marijuana conversation about legalization, it's not based upon science. There have been very few FDA-approved studies to support the medicinal use of marijuana,
right,
used in the smoked form.
Right. The medicinal use.
Right. So for in my world, if it's not going to have a greater benefit over a risk, then it's not a good thing. So the science and the research trials and all is what justifies why you should do something like that. But that has not really, right now there's a lot of social popularity and social choice, mm-hmm, that's fumigating or fueling a lot of the conversations we're having, and we're getting away from the fundamentals of good health care. So when we talk about adding or talk about allowing anything to be available to the general public, and we have not properly vetted it through our historical means of making sure that things are safer than problematic, then we ourselves are creating a huger problem.
Meg Ferris, Dr. Dunham said good health care. You've been promoting wellness, a good health care system that works for years. You have to be concerned looking at the legislature right now, the potential billion-dollar cuts, your awareness and your advocacy in these areas, and knowing that in many cases the first things that are going to be cut are opportunities for good health care.
Education and health care. I mean, what's more important than education and health? If your body and brain don't work, well, what else matters really, you know? And education, I mean, that's your ticket up. That's what makes us all equal. As you get education, any of us have the opportunity to do anything. You know?
Kevin, one of the other conversations I've had in doing outreach and some of my understanding is, I'll never forget, Boogie talked to me about the enablers in his life. And as a recovering addict, as someone who went through it, you know, he said he wished he could have had an honest conversation with the people who thought they were helping him, mm-hmm, who were actually hurting him. Now, the addict wasn't going to tell him.
Right. That's right.
Right? But they actually, in their actions and how they treated him, and even when they assisted him, the lack of knowledge about what he was going through, understanding, they did more to enable him than to help him get off the drug.
Yeah, I mean, really, I find you are who you're with, you know? And I'm not, I don't want to bat, like, I love my friends. I love my old friends. They're awesome. Right. But really, I mean, if you're around people that are using and things, you really have to remove yourself from that. And it's hard because these are lifelong friends, things like that. You're like, oh, I'm so connected. That's my boy, all this stuff. But if you go back to the same situation, you can't do the same thing expecting different results.
I want to stay there because I was victim of that, Meg and Dr. Dunham. I was trying to help a friend. I think one of the smartest people that I'd ever met, who I didn't know was an addict until I started seeing some signs. So I would started going to their friends and say, hey, man, we need to help so-and-so, right? And they were like, oh, no problem. Like, yes, indeed, we sure do, right? And then all of a sudden I found out the only reason why they were friends was because they all had the same problem. What is the proper approach, right?
It's really a fine line because you have personal deep connections, and it really is kind of just a tough decision you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you either want to get better, you know, I mean. And
so
like
so that, ultimately, it's a personal decision.
Right. It totally is. And like you really have to make the decision, I want to better myself. And really, like for me, jail was the huge rock bottom. It's like, obviously, you got to get this under control. I was not, properly taking my medications. All those things. So I was like, all right, now I got to really focus on it. And though it was a long road, I removed myself from a lot of those, you know, temptations and
Dr. Dunham, I begin to resent those friends because one of the most brilliant people I'd ever met, you know, they were enabling and abetting, but they were all sick.
And what you're talking about right now, Oliver, underscores a much bigger problem that we as a society have been very ignorant about these conditions. And when you have ignorance, you do things incorrectly. We've not funded properly. We've not made it a real part of medicine and science. We've not done the things that needed to be done to prevent us from getting to the place we are.
I want to keep it real right now. This is WBOK, Real Talk, Real Time. And what we're seeing right now, mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, drinking, smoking, toking, shooting up together. And in our community, Dr. Dunham, it's been like that
for a very long time. Very long time. And you know what? Social models will tell you, well, you know what? People, as Biff said, you do what your environment does. So if you want to change one person's behavior, you got to change their entire environment.
And so even if it's family.
Even if it's family. And these are family diseases. That's another way to think about it. When one person uses, the whole family suffers. But then you have a culture, a family culture, passed down from generation to generation, where this is what we do.
Meg, I almost saw you jump out your seat on that one.
Well, I hear what that caller, Al, said earlier about, you know, it's been a problem in the African-American community, and now it's getting the attention in the white community. And I thought Dr. Dunham's answer was brilliant to that. But, you know, the head of the FBI, when I interviewed him before he was leaving to go to Chicago, he said what's happening is soccer moms from the suburbs come in, drop their kids off at school, and then go and score, you know, in New Orleans. They are heroin. And you know, and maybe that is why it's getting more attention. But like you said, we're all in this together now, and now is the time to fight it and not look backwards. But, you know, it's heartbreaking when I hear people use the words recreational drugs, partying in quotations. It's not. Would you take Drano and put it in you? Would you put arsenic in you? No, because you know it's going to have horrible health consequences. But why do we put these euphemisms
on this
poison?
Meg, I want you to say that, too. It's amazing how we're all – because one of the things I've talked about when I talk to groups in the public is that I see now – the functioning addicts, whether they're alcoholics, pills, a little heroin, a little cocaine, where they say, I'm good because it's just happy hours from Thursday to Sunday. And they've convinced themselves that they're not addicts and that they don't have a problem. And they're at every level of professional and elite in this community. From Thursday to Sunday, they turned up.
Yeah. And I've heard people say, I would think my husband would just stop for the children. Okay, to your point, here's the deal. The part of the brain, let's call it the more primal lizard, if you will, part of the brain, that becomes addicted, that craves, it takes over the thinking frontal part of the brain, the human part where we can think and reason, ooh, I could get in a car wreck, or ooh, I could kill myself. It is so powerful. It hijacks those parts of the brain. And crystal meth hijacks two parts of the brain. That's why people use it once, and boom, they can be gone.
We probably needed a whole show for this, and I know Dr. Dunham will be back, and hopefully we'll continue to follow this effort with WBOK, Metropolitan, and WWL. Mr. Hitchens, first of all, thank you for what you do. How can people get in touch with you if they want you to talk to groups, families, or maybe do a little peer counseling?
Yeah, our main number is where we just kind of funnel all of our services.
Okay.
So that main number is 568-3130. So just call them. It's our care center. They direct all the calls to where they need to go.
Meg, we know you've been on the front line with our wellness for years. What's next? And how can folk reach out to you? I know you do a lot of public service community.
Call me at Channel 4. Email me, M. Farris. That's M-F-A-R-R-I-S at WWLTV.com. Give me your story idea. And listen, the other thing, Biff, you said, talk to high school students. We need to talk to kindergartners. I will come to your school and talk if you want.
Dr. Dunham?
And Biff gave you the number, 568-3130. MHSDLA.org is where you can find us. And also look for us, our mobile unit, in a few parades. We're rolling in Femme Fatale and Zulu.
This effort to educate and do outreach is going to continue?
It will continue. This is a phenomenal partnership that we're creating here, recognizing that no one alone can do this work.
Right, from what Mike Furstein started in the Gritty Streets to Meg Farris's, over the last couple of decades, her challenge to educate us about how we live and how we think and what we put in our bodies, to Metropolitan. We call her the mental health lady, Dr. Rochelle Hedden, and thank you guys. Look forward to y'all coming back. Y'all will be back, right?
We will be back.
This is OT and Early Bird. After the break, Mr. 411, Jeff Thomas. If you want to know, Mr. 504, 411 is Jock, who said 504 really, really knows. So we'll be back with 504, Jeff Thomas, after the break.